Hey, it's Dante. Just giving you a heads up that for this episode, both of our audio tracks had some outside interference. I cleared it up best I could, but don't be alarmed if you hear the fan of my laptop or the piano of Marilla's housemaid in the background. Thank you, as always, for listening, and please enjoy the last episode of Season 3 of Your Rivers Are Wrong. Stick around.
You're listening to Your Rivers Are Wrong, the podcast. My name is Marilla. I'm here with my good friend Dante, and we're here to build worlds and tell their stories. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Good morning, or evening, or afternoon, whenever you may be. Welcome back one more time to the last episode of this season of the Your Rivers Are Wrong podcast.
Aww.
I'm one of your hosts. My name is Dante.
And I'm the other host, and my name is Marilyn.
And we're here for episode 40, as we are every week, to talk about the wonderful whimsies of world building, the arts and aesthetics of setting up a setting, and telling stories born from it.
Ugh.
What a season it's been.
What a season. I can't believe it's the last one. Oh,
that's so crazy.
This feels bittersweet somehow.
Yeah, it feels like this season started a while ago, because just for perspective, the start of the season, basically the start of the season, I was in Europe and we recorded an episode live.
That is right.
So that was like 3 months ago, I think.
Feels like years, honestly.
That's okay, September. Crazy. We're still in November, so it's technically like, not when this comes out. This will come out in December, but it's been 2 months for this season. And just a real quick recap of what we've covered. It is hometowns. It's clouds and names with Cherry. It's mermaids. Mm-hmm. It's demigods. It's uncanny valleys and vampires. We did a whole prompts episode, which was wonderful. So many people tuned in after the YouTube video, which was so great. Thank
so
you for
fun,
all the
by
support.
The way. Yes. Amazing.
We got that big old hump on the graph of how many views we got, which is nice.
Such nice.
montages, werewolves, time loops, witches, oceans, high societies. We've covered so much, and we're here one more time for the end of season 3, concluding a full year of Your Rivers Are Wrong.
Isn't that wild? If you say it that like that, crazy. I'm like, what the hell? How do we have time for any of this? Also, I love the topics of this round. Like, there's so many tropes. I feel like we covered all the fairy tales, all the, you know, teen fiction that was there. We kind of got the hang of it.
We were definitely leaning into like teen rom-com topics or whatever. And like,
which I love,
and like
don't
mythos.
Get me wrong.
And like fantasy mythos, a whole lot of werewolves, fairies, demigods, a whole lot of that.
But you know, to be fair, I also feel like once one of us brings up a certain thing, it always inspires the next thing. So when we started the whole thing about werewolves and vampires, I was like, okay, now we got to keep going. We got to keep it
That's
up.
That's true.
So, you know, feels a natural thing, yeah, to continue with mermaids and witches and whatever else we covered.
Yeah. I'm looking at the episodes. That's so true. Oh. Okay, can you believe that all 40 of the last, and there's more than 40 now, this is the 40th episode, but we also had one with Josh and one with Cherry.
Mm-hmm.
42 episodes all happened in the last year. We started this at the end of December, so.
Yeah, what the hell?
42 episodes
That's
in
so
52
many
weeks.
Episodes for a year? That's like one every, I mean, I know we do it because we've been doing it for a year, but like one every week, that's so many episodes.
Just like we say, every week.
I'm so proud of us. That's so cool.
And we've taken like healthy breaks and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, it hasn't even been too crazy of a schedule.
It's too funny.
So
All
nice.
Right.
How do you feel about this last episode, Dante?
I feel like this, we're celebrating as we're crossing the finish line. I feel like this was a fantastic season. I think we really caught our stride here. You know, we really locked in and knew exactly what we wanted
we
to
do. We
got
it going good. Yeah.
Mm-mm. And of course, like we like literally met up for the first time this season. So that was just a huge landmark.
Best thing.
And we also recorded the oft described but not seen secret episode that we may or may not release in the future of us actually being in the same room.
Nice
with
teasers,
video and
yes.
Everything. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was so fun. Ugh.
What else? What else? Thank you for everyone who showed up in the YouTube comments of the video. That was such a pleasure. Like it's so fun to see those worlds collide and have something that is like visual for this audio only podcast.
Yes, and it looked very gorgeous thanks to your amazing animation skills. Just calling that out real quick.
Learned After Effects just to do that. So
awesome. I appreciate the effort. Looking amazing.
appreciate it.
Yeah, so fun.
any plans for this coming holiday season and or plans you've already done? And oh, you don't celebrate Thanksgiving. Why am I even asking?
No, Thanksgiving is not a thing. I have a friend who has an American partner. So she's been like, yeah, we've had Thanksgiving. And I was like, oh, hey, another person that knows about this, which is good.
Another
which is good.
Person.
And she even talked about Friendsgiving. And I felt super educated because I knew this from
because you
had to explain it to me last week. Yeah, so that was fun. But no, for us, it's going to be like Sinterklaas, which is the weird controversial holiday that we have that feels a lot like Christmas. And that's going to be 5th of December. But I'm not sure if we're going to celebrate anything or just come together and have a nice meal or something. My plans are pretty vague, as you might realize by now. And we're going to have Christmas. And I have a Christmas break from work as well. So that's super fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, good stuff.
What does it usually look like, Sinterklaas? What is that holiday? How is it different from the holiday of Christmas, which has our Santa Claus? Like, how do we separate
that? It sounds
that?
Very similar, but it is somehow different. And always, if I have to explain this to someone that doesn't know about this, I never do it right. So here's the summary of it.
Yeah.
It's it's basically an old white dude who gives us presents.
Right.
And the thing that you have with Christmas when you're hanging like your socks or something, that's basically what we do, but with kind of putting our shoe under the fireplace and then presents will appear in it. So nice, it's very similar in that regard. But then also why it's controversial, and I should shut up because this could be a whole episode. Why it's controversial is because it used to be that he would have, instead of like the elves with Santa Claus, we would have Black Pete helpers, which is very controversial and weird. And now it's been changing because people have been rioting and it's, you know... I feel like this is a whole hole we shouldn't go into, but yeah, so that's a thing.
I think that's valid.
Also, we're the only ones, and maybe Belgium as well, that celebrates this, so I don't know. I should know. I should be able to explain this properly, but I don't think I can without
that's really funny.
Insulting people.
Do so, any kids try to like cheat the system by having really big shoes? They have like their...
Oh,
like,
I used to
galoshes.
Do this because I would have these like boots. Boots were super hot when I was like... I don't know, 6. So it would be like knee-high boots. And then I would be like, okay, so at least I know whatever's going to be there, it's going to fit. just make it sure, you know. But then my parents would always be like dicks and be nice and equal about it. So it wouldn't matter.
It wouldn't matter.
You know, if you never try, you know, you are sure it's not going to be that big. So
that's exactly right.
Ticking all the boxes is what you need to do.
You hate to wake up with that note from Sinterklaas that says, hey, I was going to give you like a whole like PS1, but it didn't fit in your shoe.
Yeah.
So,
absolute
you know,
trauma.
What can we do? Right?
If you ask me. Yeah. So,
yeah, I would be devastated.
Definitely covered that. Yes.
Okay.
So you had a Thanksgiving then, yes?
Yeah, we did, which was really nice.
Nice.
My mom and dad were in the Philippines, so they were vacationing there. So we had a very small Thanksgiving, and you know, it was cozy. Usually we go all out, we do the decorations, we do the
spread.
Yeah,
I was going to say, your family stuff is always like super like big people, and you always have family plans. So I feel like this is a big deal on your side of the Atlantic.
Yeah, I think we were definitely more laid back this year than we usually are, which is nice,
I like cozy. Yeah, cozy's great.
On Sunday, we had, you know, potluck at the church, and which was nice, and everybody brought food and we ate a lot. Then in the evening, we went to another event at another church that had another potluck. So we were going in with like these massive stomachs to another full table of food. And it's just like, okay, well, we can't not eat here. That would be rude, right? When are we going to have food like this? So we're all just like,
you're not
gorged.
Oh my gosh.
We go home.
That's not okay.
And that's a whole mess.
Did you eat anything next day?
maybe I not. Didn't eat anything that night. Light breakfast in the morning, but you know. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Thanksgiving or Sinterklaas. Maybe next. I don't know. We'll never have an opportunity to talk about. Maybe we could do an episode about him in the future, but not today.
Chatting episode.
Not today.
Yeah, it will happen eventually.
just chatting episode.
We have more pressing matters.
More topics for the transatlantic table. Merlin has a topic. I have a topic, and we have a prompt to round out the season and the year.
It's
so
true.
I'm going to toss it to Marilyn. You can start your topic anytime you want. Totally up to you.
Anytime. Am I ready for this? I feel there's a pressure because it's the last episode. But that's also important. That's a good pressure. Okay. Danta, are you ready?
I am ready.
I think it's a pretty good topic for a last episode. It's like easing into the black hole that's going to be like the end of this season.
The black hole?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Easing into the void, just slipping right in.
This is all coping already. Like I'm trying to like make it easier for myself.
Got it.
Today, I think it's great if we talk about absence. And it's a very abstract topic. I know, but let me give you some context.
I'm already sad.
No, we're good.
I'm devastated.
I think it's actually funny that this is the last episode because it's like relevant. But actually, I came to this topic from a different angle, which is the following angle. I saw with a friend that there's a musical, a German musical that exists that's called Rebecca. And it's super famous in Germany and no one else knows about it, I think. Or I now know about it and I wonder why it's not a big deal because it's super good. And I found out that there's a movie about it, like an original, I think, 1940s or something movie. So I watched that movie and it was really good. And it made me kind of admire how they used absence in that story, because the whole movie revolves around a character, Rebecca, the wife of one of the main characters who has passed away. And the protagonist basically comes into the life of this man who has lost his wife and doesn't really know what happened. People are talking. He's pretty famous, but also very like to himself. And there's this whole vibe going on, the whole tension about who this person was, why she's not around anymore, and why no one is bringing up the subject. And what is she even doing here? You know, like what is her position in this? Sure. And I just love how basically the whole movie is about a character that is never on screen, doesn't have an actor or anything. She's just in the plot, basically, in the dialogue and all. She's in the story, but not actually part of it. In this case, very absent. But then the whole story has the pressure or the tension or the stakes of her existence. And I think that's super wild. And I think in order to do that properly or to feel that tension as well, you need to know how to handle or how to deal with absence, or even better, how to wrap a story around that whole concept. Because it feels very strange in a way to make a story about something or someone that is not there, that's never there. And I think that's a cool little element to play with when you're a storyteller or when you're building your worlds and your rivers and stuff.
Right. So let me understand this correctly. There was a whole play or a whole production about a person who was never, ever present. Is that right? Am I understanding this correctly?
Yes.
That's crazy.
I'm also hearing some piano in the background, but we'll just keep going. Yeah. So the musical is basically based on the movie. And the movie is based on a book, I think. I just found out. But basically, the story is the same, which is that Rebecca has passed away and she was very interesting and intriguing, but she passed away. But she's still so much in the life and the house that she lives in. And in, you know, everyone is kind of dealing with her loss, except for the main character who's trying to understand what happened.
Got it. That's so interesting. Yeah, I think as storytellers, right, we sometimes lean on visual aids to convey a disposition or a trope or a personality, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And the entire lack of means that this person can only exist as a description from others, right? They only exist from other people's perspective rather than the reader or the watcher. Mm-hmm. When we see somebody, we're free to make our own opinions on who they are, right? But if somebody else spells it out for us, then we only have like their pieces to build it up. You know how like, what this is reminding of is when you're reading a book, right? And they have like a main character and we're following the main character and that's great. But in everybody's minds, they look a little bit different, right? They're not all exactly the same. We kind of fill in the blanks of the lack of visual aid with our own interpretation of what the character looks like, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Nowadays, you think of Harry Potter, you think of like Daniel Radcliffe, right? And it's wild how like, there was an interview with J.K. Rowling where Hermione was supposed to look entirely different. And that's only something she said after all of the movies.
I've heard about this.
That had Emma Watson, right? So I think it's so interesting to approach a character from the perspective of others rather than your own, because perhaps there's more to be told about what's missing than what is there, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody says, oh, this man was a great guy, or he really benefited the community, or he had these wonderful eyes or this stare that really looked into you, right? Mm-hmm. You could have all the descriptive words, but you still have to imagine that person yourself, right? And the breadth of what this person looks like is entirely up to your imagination, which I think is powerful tool in itself. But what do you think, like, do you feel like the character was properly fleshed out throughout the whole production, or is it something that was still an enigma by the end of it?
No, I think she definitely was fleshed out well. And that's also why it worked so well.
Mm.
And to, I guess, hook into the thing that you were saying before, I think what makes it perhaps so interesting to deal or work with absence or an absent character is this idea of you're never going to get the full picture because the person's not around. So you can't make up your own mind as an audience or as the reader. So everything just exists in the perspective or the subjectiveness with which others see her or saw her in this case.
Right.
And I think good to know as well is that this movie or this story, I should say, is kind of a sort of leaning into the gothic mystery whodunit sort of thing.
Sure.
So plot twists are a big deal. And because slowly we're learning more of the truth or the truth is coming out more or people are, you know, becoming to be at odds or trying to dig deeper, we slowly start to feel like we get to know the truth or we get to know who Rebecca is for ourselves instead of through the other people. And I think that's, in this case, super well done and why it's so interesting. Something similar happens as well in the Phantom of the Opera musical, I think. It's kind of the same absence that's there when the Phantom is constantly sort of referred to and stuff, but not really present for, I think, the whole entire first act or something. Yeah, so I think at the end, because it's a sort of whodunit, in the end, we understood what happened and through that also understand kind of who Rebecca is. Yeah, so I think we do understand it at the end properly, which is also why it's so well done and why I was super, super hardcore fangirling over this because no one knows about this. And, you know, I felt like people should be super amazed by this because it's a great, great piece of theater and a great piece of movie.
I think what I wanted to talk about in that is that the absence of information is often what makes things like tense or suspenseful or mysterious, right?
Yeah.
That reminds me of is the movie Shutter Island featuring Leonardo DiCaprio, which was its own like a thriller mystery sort of psychological thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it really leans onto the narrators or the people you follow being unreliable, being like improper guides to what you should know. And
yeah,
it lends itself into like plot twists later. So the absence of information is so tense. And as a watcher, as someone consuming the media, you're desperately trying to piece it together, have something to hold on to that you can accept as truth. And not having that gets you like really invested in searching for it.
Yeah, for sure.
There's like so many movies out there that talk up the villain in these very disparate, scary ways. And then when you finally meet the villain, like the second you see them, they're suddenly either humanized or validated in terms of the rumors that surround them. And I think that that specific absence is so interesting. How we try to fill those spaces in our own minds and the conclusions that everybody reaches is, you know, slightly different.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's also the thing that makes you so eager about it, because it's so frustrating when you can't get the full picture. I think it's a very good motivator as well to kind of stay true to yourself. You also have to understand what's going on for yourself. And then through that, you can form an opinion or make justified actions, I guess. But if you can't do that because the picture is blurry, then you first need to figure out the picture. And yeah. I think that's in this example, I kind of became aware of how cool of a story that can be, the sort of figuring out what the picture actually is. In this case, we then also talk about subtext, which is kind of, you know, the in between the lines reading of what's been said is not really what's been said. Because through, you know, finding out, to stay with this example, through finding out who Rebecca is, we get to know so much about the characters that talk about her. Because if someone adored her, that either says something about Rebecca or it says something about the character that perhaps they were in love with her or they were jealous of whatever or they wished they were more important to her or I don't know, all that stuff. And because the picture, I guess, is muddy or because we have to figure out what that relationship is, we also don't get to know a lot instantly about the other characters that are present.
Yeah.
So it kind of filters through everything. And through that, the subtext becomes incredibly like complex and really like a puzzle almost, which I love. I think that's so cool and brings all that tension that you were just talking about. Yeah.
You know, sometimes I feel like if there is a mystery character or a mystery figure in a story and people talk them up as like great or legendary or whatever it is, sometimes I don't want them to be revealed at the end. You know, sometimes I have that mindset of like, okay, I have this fantastic vision of them, but I'd hate if you ruined it, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you find them and they're just, you know, the man behind the emerald mask, you know, like the guy behind the curtain.
That's true. Yep.
And it's just like, okay, well, we've been talking about Oz this whole story. Like, how do I feel now that I know exactly what he is, you know? The grandeur is lost. The excitement is lost. Yeah. And it's just like, well, dang, you know, thanks for bringing me back down to reality. I guess, you know?
Yeah, but it loses the magic sparkle of it, I guess. The mystery is gone, which is, of course, the point. But then also,
yeah, exactly.
You wish it wasn't. It's this is maybe a little bit of a side note since, you know,
sure,
we've been doing things about fan fiction anyway this whole season, so whatever. but this is also why I hated the sequel of The Phantom of the Opera so much. Because in the first... Yeah, there's a sequel, and it's called Love Never Dies, and the music's great, but the story's awful, and it feels like it's a fan fiction about the actual Phantom of the Opera. End rant.
okay, got it.
But basically, why I didn't like it is exactly this point, because in the Phantom of the Opera itself, the whole first act, or the whole, I don't know how long, but he is so absent for most of that story, right? But I think the whole first half of it, at least, it's just him, you know, his voice and him sending notes and, you know, crazy things happening in the theater, right, but not his actual presence. No one knows who this is except for that he has power and he's crazy and manipulative and scary because he hangs people. but in the whole second installment, the second, you know, the sequel of it, Love Never Dies, the first thing we see is him saying like, oh, it's been so long and I'm longing for Christine and blah, blah, blah. And so instantly, like, all this tension that's so great about the original is just blah. Yeah, it's just not there. And it's so stupid because in the original, you really feel for him because you're so enticed, like intrigued, I guess, by his mystery or by why he's doing what he's doing or why he's so, you know, tortured or confused about things. And when you instantly, when there's no veil, then there's nothing to be curious about. And that's, that's an interesting, I guess, duality that's really hard to navigate as well, which also makes it hard to write about absence, or in this case, about characters that are not revealed or something. Mm. Yeah.
Well, there's something to be said when a character's strongest point is...
Yeah. the actual strongest strength of them all.
Let me finish a sentence.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. What was I going to say? Oh my gosh. Okay.
Keep going.
I'm not editing this out. This is staying in.
Yeah, it's too much now. That's a bit.
Sometimes a character's strongest selling point is their scarcity, right? Because they only show up every now and then.
Right.
Whenever they show up, it's a big deal. You know, the big bad, all the mystique,
becomes precious.
The villainous veil around them. When they show up, it's like, oh, it's a big deal. Let's go. Like, everybody get ready. Mm. Here it happens. But if he shows up at the top of every episode, then I'm like, all right, well, you know.
Yeah, he's literally irregular now.
He's just a regular.
Yeah.
He's a cast regular. Exactly that.
Yeah.
Like a character like the Phantom. I haven't ever watched the Phantom of the Opera. Sorry.
Traitor. Oh my god, reveal. Dante.
I'm so sorry. I haven't watched the Broadway of Broadway. It's my bad.
But it even has like a super good video like 25th anniversary.
We already established I'm well behind what I should know in terms of, okay, you're looking, for people who can't see.
I won't say it, but I have opinions.
She's giving me a look. Yeah. She's giving me a look. I've been judged. If I never said that, if I left that information absent, I'd be judged.
Ignorance is bliss. Yes. I know this flaw about you now. Yeah.
Fantastic. This flaw. Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. But yeah, that's all I had to say. Basically, sometimes less is more. Knowing less about them makes them more interesting, makes them more enticing, adds a grandiose power or aura around them that is lost when you give them too much. You know, if I knew the villain's favorite ice cream flavor, suddenly that's a little less intimidating, right? But if I don't, still scary. Spooky.
Yes. Much more scary, in fact. Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, totally agree. And also good to note, though, that there's a difference between a character just not getting screen time and a character not being talked about. Because absence, you know, there's loads of characters that just have one line somewhere that no one cares about because they're not a big deal in the story, right? So it's really about the sort of purposeful distance between someone being talked about versus someone actually there to defend himself or to, you know, inform us about them or their character, I guess, literally. Mm. Yeah. And I think this is not true because not, so far we've been talking about characters, but I think it's also very true about, you know, landscapes, ruins that you can see that, or, I don't know, traces of war, or, you know, something so literal as, you know, a footprint. Stuff like that is works in the same way, I think.
Mm.
And the more time or room you give as the creator in the story to talk about it or to investigate it versus the room you give in the story for it to speak for itself, sure. either the landscape or, you know, a history book or a character. Yeah, that really changes the way we look at that thing that is absent because we gain a sort of sense of importance from it. And that's really nice and interesting.
Yeah.
And something that I've been a super big fan of since I've watched this Rebecca movie because it's so good.
Yeah, isn't that the core of storytelling, to start with no information and to slowly reveal it in the most interesting and enticing way?
You're not wrong.
Everything right at the start.
Yeah.
Great topic.
So nice.
Loved that.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, that's all I got.
Sure. And I think I have a great bridge for this.
Mm.
In staying in the same vein as topics you probably bring to therapy, this next topic does deal quite a bit with implied information, so to speak, using the lack of information and developing it into something more. And that is my topic. My topic is shared histories.
Oh.
Shared histories. So the
cool.
perspective or the scope I want to tackle with this is, at least at the start, maybe we can branch out later, but the scope of the topic for now is simply a shared history of two characters. When you enter into a story, most of the characters you meet are blank slates. They're a face, they're a body, they're an attire. There's a visage that you can use to group them into certain tropes or certain placeholders until you learn who they are further. But there's always something so interesting about when two characters already have a lot of history with each other well before the story begins.
Yeah.
And those blanks, the blanks of like what that relationship is slowly filled in. I do want to pull an example just to kind of start the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
A long time ago, I watched the series called The Newsroom on HBO, where the main character is a news anchor and a very talented, very rich, outspoken news anchor. And his news channel is struggling. And the person they bring in to fix this, the executive producer they hire to fix this problem, is his ex. And it's just like, okay, well,
interesting.
And we only know that, right? We don't know much about their relationship besides what they say in passing throughout the seasons every now and then until they really dive into it and kind of repair that whole dynamic towards the end of the series.
Yeah.
But just having an implied history makes their vitriol to each other at first or their disagreements have so much more weight because you know there's something behind it. And nobody really understands why they act that way. And that's not something you can do in a meaningful, deep manner if the characters never knew each other to begin with, right?
Yeah.
Two characters disagreeing with each other that don't know each other at the very start.
Yeah, you have nothing to build upon. Yeah, you got to create it as you go, I guess.
Yeah, the argument is purely just ideals or personality clashing. Mm. But when they already have this history, everything kind of has the nuance of, oh, this is similar to something that happened before, you know? Also, to build on that, the reason this is coming up and the reason I like tried to remember this series is because I've been trying to play a new tabletop RPG called Masks. And Masks is a superhero RPG. You play as teen superheroes trying to balance, like, you know, schoolwork and the hero life.
That sounds great.
And just like many other systems or RPG systems in its little family called Powered by the Apocalypse, which is a special, you know, structure to make your RPGs around, they almost always have something called linked backstories. Here it's called relationships. Everybody writes out their backstory, and then there's two mandatory questions that you have to fill out and fill in the blanks with another member of that party. So say you're playing a character who's a loner. Your two blanks are blank is the person you've always had disagreements with. And the other blank is the person who knows how to open you up when you're feeling distant. And you have to fill in those blanks with people who you're playing with. So you already innately have the dynamic that you can flesh out later.
Yeah, I like that. That's interesting.
Whenever I'm teaching people this game, which is, I've taught it twice now, which is wonderful. Everyone has so much fun here because they start thinking about how their character would react to another character and how that dynamic plays out without too much context. You know, if you only have this flat line and you have the time and the sessions and the hours to fill in those blanks and add depth and add flavor to that, that's something that you would never scheme on your own until you are given permission. The fact that it's baked into this game right at the start adds such a layer of like nuance that I very, very much enjoy. So that's our topic for today. Shared history.
Yeah, I love it so much. I think instantly already I'm like wheels are turning in my brain, because what I find fascinating about this mechanic is that it both forces you to look back, you as sort of the character in the now, in the current moment, in the whatever the first, you know, event or occurrence is that you're finding yourself in this RPG. But because this mechanic exists, then both you in the game, you're kind of figuring out the now, the current moment. But then because you have the dynamic of the backstory, it forces you to understand what the backstory was or what that is in the now, or what sort of, I guess, again, the traces of it. So you're instantly playing sort of two games now that are very interwoven, right. Of course. But because of that, it's literally more layered because you have more layers to it. And I think that's very nice. Also, in terms of something being not spoken of or something existing, but only for some people, I think that's a very cool thing to put in an RPG in general, because then you're not equals. And that means that you have to figure out what your opinion is on that,
sure.
Or why you might like or not like that position that you're in now, mm-hmm. in this group, in a sort of social way, in a social setting, I guess is my point. And it is obviously a social game. Right. So that instantly creates also a hierarchy maybe, or a dynamic that you have to, yeah, have an opinion about or have to act on behalf of, I guess. And that's very cool and complex, I guess, which is nice.
Yeah. I find that more than anything, it immediately has players be invested with the development and stories of other players, right? Mm. When you bring your character to an RPG, sometimes you're so caught up in your own backstory that everybody else is just kind of a footnote in that, in right. that path, yeah. in that hero's journey, so to speak. But when you already have these ley lines into other people next to you, and it's like, well, my backstory says that this person is important. How do I convey that? How do I make them important?
Right. Yeah.
And I know I hate this person according to this line. How do I play on that? How would I react to everything they say? Wait, why do I hate them? Wait, let me see. Let me check that backstory again. Like, why are we beefing? And it gets the brain spinning, and it gets people, and I've noticed, it gets people who aren't usually invested in that whole social aspect, who would rather like number crunch. It gets them invested in this interesting new thing to play with. That
the social game of it, perhaps.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's such a cool tool for storytelling. It's so wonderful. But yeah, I often enjoy when I start a series and two characters are already well storied with each other. And everything they talk about has that little, you know, twinge of
edge to it. Yeah.
I'm saying it because, you know, you did it this time. And I remember when that happened. Mm-hmm. And even in like real life, of course, we have these same nuances. You know, when we watch a lot of like improv sketches from the Dropout TV stuff. Right. And mm-hmm. you can always tell when two people have like worked together before.
Because yes, that's super true.
They like key off each other real quick. If we're talking about like the off book cast, like Jess McKenna and
Zach Reno,
there we go. Yeah. Whenever they're in the same room, you can tell they know exactly what beats to hit because they have this innate trust with each other. Same thing with a couple of the Dimension 20 cast. Whenever they're in the same room, they know what jokes are okay. They know what buttons to push that'll like, one, make their stage partner comfortable, and two, something that they know they can handle or like play with well.
Yeah.
And it's so, so fun.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, so like shared histories is just a fantastic tool in terms of like what kind of story you want to tell. It adds a note of investment in the people who are paying attention to your story, because if they like one character, then they have to understand how they connect to another character. You know, they have to understand those dynamics and how they play with each other.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah, because it forces you to also understand the network. Because if a character is very invested in another character because they have a big history together, or they've been together, or they've had beef together at some point, I don't know, then a lot about that first character, if I would be interested or curious about that first character, I would learn a lot about them by understanding this history, which also means that I have to understand what character two is up to, because that's part of the deal, kind of. It made me think, now that we're talking about like improv and stuff, it made me think instantly about the relationship that was improvised, I guess, or played with in the EXU Calamity with Sam Riegel and Abri Iyengar playing like a divorced couple that were definitely not ready for a divorce yet. I don't know how it happened exactly. I think I had like one or two pre-games where they were like, oh, this could be fun. And then they did it in the actual game. But because of that, that whole dynamic between them got so much edge and sort of nastiness to it that it was the absolute most pleasure to watch in my life. If I've ever watched, you know, a relationship break, this was the best one. And it's so nice because other characters know more about something or about each other than you do. I wonder what the hell happened. And then I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but it's so interesting. And the secrecy, I guess, of it, or the lack of information,
the absence.
I guess we're circling back now, makes it so that I want to understand what the secret is, or what I've invested in so much now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so fun to see them push those buttons and those interactions, those conversations, right? If they never talked to each other, if they never had that shared history, that conversation would happen like days, episodes, years into the story, right? But you can skip all that if you just imply it and talk about it later. And it's a different pace of storytelling, so to speak, where you can kind of fill in the blanks as you go rather than work on a blank page like right from the get-go.
Yeah, for sure. I think what interests me most about, I guess, the two topics that we've sort of touched upon now, because I think they're pretty linked somehow. They have a history together. Yeah, moving on. but what I love most about this is that it really says a lot about how you, I guess, structure your story based on if you're looking more at what happened in the past or if you're starting with a blank slate and filling it in as you go in the story, the sort of classic inexperienced hero that learns and grows on their journey and is a better human because of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes both happen in the same story where kind of as we've discussed now, characters have history together, but also throughout the storyline itself or throughout the moments in the now, the current line of events or whatever, that changes or their dynamic grows as well. Sometimes it's just a character that tries to learn about their past, where mainly the lack of information about the past or the confusion revolving their past is the main subject of the story. You know, you have all the, I think we've covered this as well, like amnesia tropes and people figuring out their relationship with themselves as well, stuff like that. And you have the complete opposite side that I just talked about, where you have the classic hero that is kind of uninteresting in the beginning of the story. And then, bam, their spaceship crashes and now they have to be interesting because they have to fix a lot of stuff. Right?
Damn, yeah, I hate when I have to be interesting because my plane crashes.
I know, right? Oh, so annoying. Oh, yeah. And I think sometimes I used to think for a good story, you had to have all the elements, like you had to both have an interesting history to come from and an interesting place to go. But now I also realize that sometimes it's just a very cool puzzle to try to figure out what it is that we've just been through or that happened before we actually started reading or watching or whatever, because it has this weight to it and because it's not new. I think this also links a little bit to the, I guess, gothic novel theme a little bit. But when you come into, you know, a house that's lived in, it's very hard to feel at home and you have to force yourself to either understand it or leave or, make yourself at home. And I think that's a cool way of looking at how you want to develop your plot or your characters for that matter.
Yeah, I think just unpacking that in general is its own little adventure, like figuring out how a character copes with another character's history or how you deal with your past or somebody else's past and how you address that. I think that's a very real topic for a very real world, you know?
I guess so, yeah.
The more like you have your characters understand that nuance and approach it with the knowledge that like people have lived entire lives before you've met them, it has a gravitas in itself, you know?
Yeah.
But with that said, it doesn't have to be intimidating. If suddenly you're like, oh, I want these characters to like know each other, but like not know each other or like discover more about each other. How do I do that? How do I tell? It really is simpler than you think. Like you look at the story of She-Ra, right? Main characters, Katra and Adora. Yeah. You could sum up their entire shared history with one line. They were best friends. Mm. Right. And that's it. And you just like start there and go. And the rest of that fills in the blanks. The trope, like we can bounce back one episode to like love triangles.
Oh, yeah.
The concept of childhood friend, the entire topic in one trope.
Uh-huh.
The fact
that
they have known each other. They had for years. They've had all of these experiences and memories already implied. And you don't really need to know the details. I can fill in the blanks later. Just the idea that they've already known each other and already have this kind of step up of you knowing them versus them knowing somebody else is just like, you know, there's so many directions you can go with that.
Yeah,
I think
for
this
sure.
is just a tool to tell a story.
And this is also, maybe to round it off a little bit, but this is also something that's perfect for how I like to write stories or how it happens often with me. Sometimes I just sort of stumble upon a character or I just start writing randomly. And then if one of the characters says something or does something that I didn't really account for or that I don't really understand. And this is kind of the same principle where suddenly your character gets angry over something that you might have not intended in the first place, or kind of as you were writing it, you know, in the flow of it, you just end up in a little bit different place than you were going.
Sure.
Then your character can surprise you and you have to do that labor of figuring out what their history is or why they're doing this in the way that they're doing it. Yeah. And then the same principle happens again, where actually you as the creator or as the writer or the storyteller or whatever have to start to understand your characters. And sometimes when you let your characters just do things that purposefully do things that don't make sense to you, you get to be in that position of figuring out. And that's super fun because then you both, you can decide it because, you know, they exist only for you if you're starting to write a story like that. But also the process of figuring out is so fun and is one of the things that I absolutely love about storytelling. And you can use this mechanic as well to make interesting characters because you can do the figuring out as you go, basically. Yeah. And I love that so much.
Some of the best improv on stage or like at the table is done when you make up a connection and have to fill in the blanks as you go. Like
it's
on
exactly
the spot.
The same. Yeah.
Just got to go for it. You know, that's the fun in it. Don't be afraid to make mistakes and just like do your best and have just a blast. It's really way more fun once you put it into practice. So
yeah.
That's my topic.
So good. Perfect fit.
What a match of character topics.
Oh, we're getting so good at this.
So in sync. and as we prepare to close out our podcast, we have one last thing to do. The last prompt of season 3 of 2022 is upon us. Mirla, could you help me out and tell me what the prompt is? And we improvise it on the spot where it goes.
I will. Very much influenced by my rekindled love of Gothic storytelling. Here we go. It's quite a literal one, I think, today.
Sure.
So setting the scene a little bit, I want you, this takes place in an old mansion or house of some sorts. Whether it's abandoned or not, I don't really mind. You can figure that out. But our character or suddenly someone finds a fresh lily in a corner that no one has been to in ages or in a room that no one has unlocked in ages. And no one really knows how it came there. And it's a fresh flower. So it's not like, well, it could be magic, but what happened? What happened, Dante?
Oh my gosh, it's so tricky. Let me think. Let me think. Okay, I'm filling
it. You can process. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm calibrating here. All right.
Yes.
Old haunted mansion? Question mark?
Sure.
Old abandoned mansion. Curiously has a lily in the corner growing that nobody knows the origin of. Am I following?
Yes.
Okay. Now I got to visualize. Is this coming out of the floorboards or is this like in a potted plant?
I pictured this as basically just like a cut flower. Like, you know, when you buy a single rose like that.
Oh.
But it can be a plant as well if you wanted to.
Oh, so it's just like, I mean, I'm leaning because you're putting a flower in a haunted house, right? You're putting a flower in a haunted house.
Correct.
I'm leaning towards like there's obviously a little bit of a romance perspective from there because it's a flower and a little bit of a tragedy sort of angle because of
always
haunted
tragedy.
House.
I love it.
Why is this an abandoned mansion? Why did they abandon it? Whenever you have like cut flowers just existing on their own, I see like Beauty and the Beast. I'm thinking like,
I realize that connotation, but yes, that's very similar.
So it's very much that, oh gosh. Now I'm just playing around with the topic. Now I'm just going to brace a little bit. Okay.
Do it.
Across my legs. I've situated myself. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Get comfortable. So, yes.
How do we preserve flowers? Like, why are they preserved? Either they're magically preserved. There's like something behind them that enchants them. They are put into books. Books preserved the beauty or longevity of flowers even beyond their lifespan. Could be a sign of things to come. Something being reborn. There's an aspect of an angle of life and of giving here.
If it's preserved at all, you know, like it could also just be apparently someone has been here recently because this flower can't just be here for no reason.
Hmm.
All the angles.
I think we can go with a really simple story here. And now, you know what? We're going to spend some time. This house is no longer haunted. This house is no longer haunted. That's the opening line. This house is no longer haunted. Years back when it was owned by the, give me a last name. Just hit me with a last name. What you got? Anything that I can pronounce. I can't pronounce a lot of names.
The Lancasters.
Lancasters. This house was bought for Mr. and Mrs. Lancaster to exist in. Their dynamic is very flower themed. One of them is a florist. The other is a gardener.
Yes, please.
They had a beautiful garden all set up. And one day, Mr. Lancaster arrives at home with, you know, a bouquet that they bought from somewhere else. And they walk in and find Mrs. Lancaster. And set up in one of the flower arrangements all around the house, Mr. Lancaster notices a flower that he's never seen before. How did it get into the house? This dynamic and this query and them both being strangely experts in this field, they come to the conclusion that Mrs. Lancaster got this from somebody else, perhaps another lover, perhaps another admirer, and not wanting to waste a perfectly good flower, they planted it and left it within one of their, mm-hmm. one of their plots. You know, misunderstandings lead to arguments, arguments lead to tarnished emotions, and despite what their vows were at their wedding, that their love is as everlasting as a garden they tend to, Mr. Lancaster was forced to depart. He could no longer stay. And the house fell into ruin. The garden was no longer tended to by two people, but now one. Things fell into disrepair as Mrs. Lancaster felt that it wasn't worth preserving. This whole setup that they had here, this whole beautiful arrangement that they had here, was tarnished by a singular poor flower. And time passes, lives move on. 40, 50 years later, Mr. Lancaster returns to the house for what whim he doesn't really know. He brings the same bouquet that he brought the first time he made that discovery. And he walks in, and understandably, the neighbors have all told him that this house has been abandoned for years, for centuries. Not centuries, that's too long. For years. because the previous owner has passed and nobody's bought it, considering the land haunted. He walks in, and once he walks in, he walks into that same room where he saw those same flowers that he didn't recognize, and those have all since wilted, of course. But he finds a singular flower planted in a singular pot in the corner of the room from the same bouquet that he brought that day. It matches the one that he holds. And he hears a voice in the house that is haunted of somebody who, despite all of their trials and tribulations, have worked to protect the love and foster the love that they promised all those years ago. And those feelings, those regrets, those trials, and all the love that they had still remains in this house, if only to preserve that single flower. They meet one more time. And after that moment, after that brief reunion, the house is no longer haunted. The house is no longer haunted. That's it. Cut the tape. Cut the tape.
I love it. Can I buy it as a book and add it to my gothic novel obsession, please? Please.
Well, if you want a copy of it, you can find it on on the podcast called Your Rivers Are Wrong, episode 40.
Wow, what a good reference.
Yeah, real, we are.
That's so good. You know what you're so good at, Dante? Doing like proper pauses. I'm so jealous of your like improv skill of like pausing properly in storytelling. Yeah,
you know, because you know where I learned that?
It's instantly cool.
I learned that from playing RPGs where players misinterpret pauses. Well, misinterpret me scrambling to know what to say next for dramatic pauses. Yeah. As long as you say it in a really cool way, it's a dramatic pause.
Honestly, this is exactly what happened just now. And you're so good at it. It's great.
Oh my gosh.
And it works so well for like mystery and stuff. It's so good.
I love when I think for too long and it's interpreted as dramatic. Well,
as long as you keep staring intently, it's just really good.
Well, nobody it's else gets the webcam experience.
Yeah, that's
you
fair.
You get the webcam experience where I'm mm-hmm. always just like...
I got the VIP treatment, yes.
The VIP treatment, my brow is furrowed and my head is all concentrated. Well, it has been a blur of a year. If you've been here from the start, and I know some of you have, there's a handful of you who have reached out to
the
us and told us that you've listened
ones, yes.
to everything. Amazing. That is... so crazy. We are thankful that you guys are all listening, new and old. There's a lot of new faces, a bunch of old faces. This has truly been a passion project for both of us. Mm-hmm. And although we may have struggled over the months and weeks to keep it all together and to continue to put our best foot forward when our schedules get kind of crazy.
It's a learning experience, you know, as we figuring it out as we go. Yes.
We hope and very much aim to bring you the best world building / storytelling / water themed podcast that could ever exist on any streaming platform. You want streaming platforms? We'll give you streams right here.
All the streams, nowhere to find them. Yeah.
At our uniquely named podcast. Anything you want to say for the fans, Marla?
Of course. I just want to say thank you to all the people that listen to our crazy rambles. It's so nice. It's so nice to have people in my, like, I guess not digital life that are like, hey, I just listened to your episode, and I'm so humbled each time, and it's so amazing that we can share just our kind of cool random nerd hangouts with the rest of the people. And it's even better that people want to join the conversation. And I just think that's awesome and super wonderful. And something that, because we've been so busy and because we've cranked out so much episodes, I sometimes forget about it a little bit until someone says, hey, I listened to this and I thought it was really cool. And then I'm back into it. And it's good.
We made that.
It's our little baby. And it's pretty good.
And what do you call it? I think we've both used this time and space to just find a very quick break from the hustle and bustle of life. And I hope when you listen to this, you get the same feeling, you know?
That's the ultimate goal, I guess. Aside from, you know, figuring out if our river is right or not. But
yeah, but that comes later.
Well, we'll get to that eventually. Yeah.
Maybe next season. Maybe, I guess.
Stay tuned.
As you continue to world build and storytell, as you continue to tap into the imagination that we insist you let free.
Yes, always. Please do so. It's the best way to live life. It's the most fun way to storytell, for sure.
Always, 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 always remember just this very one universal truth, this very one thing.
What is it?
Your rivers are wrong.
Oh, yep. And still true still wrong, after all this time.
And they'll always be wrong.
We'll never get rid of these wrong rivers.
Thanks for listening.
You know, forces us to make another season. Yay!
Yeah. I'll see you then. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I'm waving. They can't see me. Goodbye.
Waving. It's happening. Aw.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes that you'd like to hear us cover, feel free to contact us at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. Our intro and outro music is written by Maarten Schellekens. Thanks for that. And again, thank you so much for listening. We hope to see you at the next one.